From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. We always get excited about American saints. I think that's a big thing. And when we talk about those people on the path to sainthood in America, it's kind of a small number in some ways when you talk about the Venerable's blesseds before they have all their miracles and are declared saints by Rome. Something like 25 people throughout American history are on that path. And then there are people who are servants of God, meaning that they're in that stage before being declared venerable, where their life of heroic virtue is recognized. And we've got someone who's quite young, who's on that path to sainthood as a servant of God, and her name is Charlene Richard. And you might know her as the Little Cajun Saint, but there's a new miracle that's being claimed through her intercession. We'll be talking with the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation in Lafayette, Louisiana. That's Nanette Reiners, and she'll be joining us later in the show. We'll also be checking in with Father Timothy Tarnacki from the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Of course, August 26 is that feast day of that Queen of Poland, who's one of the great Marian icons in history. And there's that beautiful shrine in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. And we'll be looking forward to talking with Father Timothy later in the show about that great devotion. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. Each week, we look at the miracles happening all around the world, and we travel to shrines all around the world. And this week will be no different. Check out my program on Saturday, August 16th at 5 p.m. Central Time. And also, they might be Saints Francis Xavier Silos. He's a blessed from the United States, also from Louisiana, and his episode will be airing on August 19th. That's a Tuesday, so check that one out, Father Francis Xavier Silos. And his life, he was a renowned confessor, a spiritual director. He led missions throughout the United States in the early 19th century. And there's a new miracle that's being investigated that's been attributed to him. Who knows, someday soon we may be see him as St. Francis Xavier Silos. So check that one out on August 19th on Tuesday. Later in the show, we'll do like we always do, and we'll look at the might-be saint of the day. For today, we've got Blessed Petra de San Jose Perez Florido, who lived from 1845 to 1906 in Spain. And the 365 Days with Mary Project looks at the title of Mary, Our Lady of Graces, from Torcoroma in Colombia in the year 1711. And the question of the week, it's a good one. It's, why aren't some visionaries like Diego Lazaro in Mexico canonized? And the miracle of the day, the Eucharistic miracle in Siena, occurred in the year 1730. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And this is the story of a Minnesota boy who survived a fall that sent an arrow through his brain, and people are calling it a miracle. Now, a hospital in Minnesota was left in disbelief after a 9-year-old boy survived an accidental fall that sent an arrow through his brain and nearly out the back of his skull. And Abby Detterding recently told the Minneapolis News that this freak mishap did not kill her son. Gus, we're so thankful, so grateful, she said. And as his parents recounted, Gus was helping his father, Dave, pack up his truck for a hunting trip in March when he slipped on the icy driveway outside their home in Alexandria, about 130 miles northwest of Minneapolis. And a youth bow and arrow were among the items Gus was carrying at the time he slipped, and he fell face first on the arrow, which penetrated his head just to the right of his nose. Gus pulled the arrow out of his head by himself and immediately went to see his mother, who was vacuuming, and the bleeding, there was not much bleeding, but he was panicked, and he kept saying, "Mom, am I dying? Am I going to leave you? I don't want to leave you yet." That's what Abby recalled her son saying. And she told Gus that he'd be okay, and they were just going to go to the hospital to get some stitches. A cautious emergency room doctor had Gus flown by helicopter to Children's Minnesota Hospital in Minneapolis, where staffers observed him a few hours before releasing him home. And after getting him home, Gus began vomiting, and his parents brought him back to the hospital, and they took brain head scans of the boy. And the scans contained a startling revelation. The arrow had pierced through the middle of Gauss's brain and came within less than an inch of exiting his skull. And it literally took my breath away, and I felt sick to my stomach, Abby said, when she saw those scans. And according to the confusion was the fact that Gus seemed to be fine while he was in the hospital. And the pediatric intensive care unit reportedly said that they'd never seen anything like this in 28 years. That was the doctor who treated him. He looked too normal. And so he had no ill effects. They had found a wound months after it occurred, prompting them to attribute that to the earlier fortune of God controlling the direction of the arrow. And they said that it was, the parents said that it was, this is God's miracle rather than this being lucky. We know that this just didn't happen. And that's the father, Dave Detterding, saying that. So that in that accident where that arrow miraculously missed everything and went through his brain, went almost out through his skull, but the boy was fine. And so that's the miracle news. Check out the Facebook page of the Miracle Hunter, where I'll post a link to this incredible story. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in the fastest with the correct answer. My friends who know me know that I love trivia, and you might find me at a random bar some night playing pub trivia, but this is Catholic Pub Trivia, and each person with the correct answer will you write in to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page of my website, miraclehunter.com, and the fastest one is going to win that prize, and answers and winners will be posted on that show page. So the question from last week, why is August 13th the feast day of Blessed Michael McGivney? And we got a few answers coming in, people saying that it was the founding date of the Knights of Columbus, which was a great guess. And of course, most times when we see the feast day of a saint or future saint, we see it happening on the death anniversary or the birthday. Well, it turns out for Michael McGivney, his birthday is on August 12th and his death anniversary is on August 14th. So they split the difference and put his feast day smack in the middle, August 13th. So that's the reason we have the August 13th feast day for Blessed Michael McGivney, the founder of the Knights of Columbus. This week's question, we're talking today about Charlene Richard from Louisiana, the little Cajun saint as she's known. And so she would become the youngest American person on the path to sainthood as a venerable, blessed, or saint. But what's the answer to that question? Who is the youngest American servant of God, venerable, blessed, or saint? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com. And we'll see if you have the right answer. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Nanette Reiners, the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation in Lafayette, about a brand new miracle that's being attributed to the little Cajun saint. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We love talking about future American saints on this show. And there are saints from all over the United States of all different ages, but the youngest of all is this Charlene Richard, the little Cajun saint, as she's known. And her death anniversary is upon us, so it's a perfect time. There's a mass being celebrated to honor her and to connect people to her cause for canonization, which currently she's a servant of God and still in the diocesan phase. And eventually, someday, that cause will move to Rome for the Roman phase. And perhaps she will move on at some point quickly, we hope, to venerable and then with two miracles, to blessed and to saint. Well, we're so excited today to be joined by Nanette Reiners. She's the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation in Lafayette, Louisiana. Welcome back to the show today, Nanette.
Good evening.
It's great to talk to you today, and I think this is
People always get excited about Charlene. I think this idea of a young girl who's lived a saintly life, and there are so many miracles that are claimed associated with her. I think that many people go to her grave in hopes of being healed or having some other miracle. So she's well known in Louisiana, and her renown is growing throughout the United States. Talk a little bit to us today about Charlene Richard. Who was the girl, and what do we know about her?
Well, she was 12 when she died. She was very devout Catholic. She always took up for the underdogs. She had a devotion to Saint Therese of Lisieux, and she'd often asked her grandmother if she could be like her. And her grandmother said, you know, anybody can try to be a saint or live a saintly life. Being the president of the foundation, I have mailed prayer cords that we make with the prayer cloth all over the United States and even other countries. I've mailed some to Brazil and to Singapore and places like that. But people come 24/7, all hours of the day and night to pray at Charlene's grave. And a lot of times, you know, they say they had a miracle performed or that happened to them because they prayed to Charlene. But when it comes to miracles, Rome only uses some of them that haven't had any treatment for different illnesses and stuff. And so they are looking at one of the miracles, which was a lady from New York. While she was pregnant, they detected that the baby would have had some kind of brain, something with the brain. And so she delivered the baby last year, December 27th. They took the baby and they did MRIs and different tests, and the baby didn't have anything wrong with it. She did name the baby Charlene Marie after Charlene, and she is coming down for the mass on Monday. And she's supposed to kind of give a little talk between the rosary and mass of their story.
Wonderful. So, what is the next step for that miracle? Who would begin the investigation, or how would it work?
That all is done in Rome, and I'm not sure, you know, when or how or who looks at all that in Rome.
And of course, Rome takes a long time to go through that process, where the medical commission looks at an alleged miracle and investigates it and comes to an answer with that. So we'll keep praying for that, and that miracle is recognized by Rome. And in the meantime, of course, we have the death anniversary mass related to Charlene Richard upon us. Talk a little bit about what who comes out for that mass, and where is it celebrated, and what are the prayers, I assume, are for the cause for canonization for Charlene.
Okay, the mass will be, like I said, August 11th, this coming Monday. We start with the rosary at 5:30 till about 5:45. And then this year, Sophie, who is the lady from New York, will give her little story on her miracle. And after that, we have the mass. And then after mass is over, we have a little reception in our church hall, and the mass is at St. Edward Catholic Church in Richard, but the address is Church Point for people that are looking it up. There's also going to be a nun from Rome that is in the country right now, and she is going to be doing one of the readings for the mass, which is another, you know, how can I say that? Another something exciting happened this year for mass. It's usually the rosary and then mass, but this year we'll have like a guest speaker and a nun from Rome that's able to do a reading for us this year.
Wonderful. And for those people who are just learning about Charlene, and it's the first they've heard of her perhaps, what is it about her that so many people are so excited about and want to travel to her tomb, as in the case, or her grave, in the case of this recent healing, or they contact you for these prayer cloths? What is it about the girl Charlene Richard that has captivated the attention and excitement and devotion of so many people?
Well, while she was in the hospital dying, when the chaplain of the hospital would go to her room, she always would ask who she was supposed to suffer for that day. It was never about her and her pain and stuff. She offered it for everybody else. And when people heard of that after she died, people started praying to her. And, you know, to them, they said she was a saint because their prayers had been answered. You know, she was such a young person, but had the faith of a much older person. She just was this real religious child. And it's hard to explain, you know, because we always think that they're saints. They come from Rome, Spain, and all that. And to have one here almost in our backyard, it's just this feeling that I can't even explain, you know, that we can reach out and almost touch her.
That's right. So many people get excited about Americans on our own soil who have been along that path to sainthood. And so having this young girl who lived a life of holiness and has so many miracle stories that are associated with her, that's pretty attractive to a lot of people, I'm sure. We've been talking today with Annette Reiners, the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation in Lafayette. And you mentioned these prayer cloths that that people are call you about or write in about from all around the world, and you send them out, and there are people who have claimed miracles through this and otherwise healings or changes in their life. How can people contact you? What's the best way to contact you to get one of those
cloths? The best way to contact us is through our foundation email, because that way I can keep a better record of, you know, what's coming in and who I sent to, who I still need to send to. But that email address is Charlene, Charlene, Richard, Foundation, @gmail.com.
Wonderful. Charlene Richard Foundation at gmail.com. So people can email you there and put in the request for the prayer cloth, and I guess you send them out at that point once they've contacted you.
I do mail them out. And we started too now having what will be a third-class relic that we're selling for $5. It's a prayer card with a piece of cloth that was wrapped in the cloth that she was put on when she was exhumed. And so this will be a third-class relic when she's canonized. And so anybody wanting some of those can also contact us through the email, the foundation email. And I want to let people know that if they have been praying to Charlene and have had what they feel a miracle happen, to please send those in, because, you know, there's people think, you know, well, my story doesn't really matter, or they're afraid to send it in. But that might just be the piece that they're looking for to get everything together. So anyone who has anything, any testimonies or anything, to send to the foundation, and we in turn turn those over to the priest that's working on the cause, and he gets with Rome on that. So no one should think that their story is not important, and so they can send it also to that email address.
Wonderful. Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. The various miracles that have been used to elevate somebody to blessed or to saint, they haven't necessarily happened in a way that anybody expects, or the stories haven't been reported in a very similar way necessarily. So anybody who has a miracle of any sort, or a healing or a grace or an intercession or a blessing, you might say, all those things are worth passing along to the cause, because it goes in the sainthood file anyway when that's sent to Rome. So I think those are all great things for people to report. And like you say, you never know if a miracle that a person experienced might be the very miracle that boosts Charlene ahead to blessed and to saint someday. So be sure to send those in.
Might be the piece to the puzzle that everybody's looking for.
Exactly right. Well, we're so grateful to you, Nanette Reiners, for the president of the Charlene Richard Foundation in Lafayette, Louisiana. As we wrap up the interview today, talk to us a little bit about why we look at Charlene as such a great intercessor and the impact that she can have in our lives?
Because so many people have had miracles performed, or say they have, because they're, you know, praying to her. You know, she's, since I've been president, I've met people, and now I'm giving talks. In fact, this week it's three of them that I'll be giving on Charlene. And so I just feel like, you know, there's so many people out there that know of her, that are hungry for more and more of stories about her. And it's been a privilege to be president and to work with the foundation.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Nanette Reiners, for joining us on today's program. Thank you for talking to us about Charlene Richard, and we'll certainly be praying that she moves along that path to sainthood, from venerable to blessed to saint. Thank you so much, Nanette, for joining us on today's program.
All righty.
God bless. That was Nanette Reiners from the Charlene Richard Foundation in Lafayette. It's an amazing story, that story of Charlene Richard. I hope someday that we can feature her on an episode of They Might Be Saints. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And it's always fun to see what people write in about. And I've got a pretty strange email inbox, as you might imagine. People writing in about all the things on their minds. And I love answering questions in person as well. I give talks around the country. I probably do 15 or 20 a year, where I travel to various parishes or shrines or conferences. And I always talk about miracles. I always do. And I talk about Marian apparitions or Eucharistic miracles or how the church investigates the supernatural. But I always leave a little bit of time at the end of the presentation to answer people's questions. So whether that's 15 minutes, 20 minutes, or longer, I love hearing what people have to say about miracles and what they're thinking about. So we've got a great question for you today. It's, Dear Miracle Hunter, why aren't some visionaries like Diego Lázaro in Mexico canonized? Thank you, Andy. Well, thanks, Andy, for your question. You're referencing Diego Lázaro in Mexico. That's the person who had the visions of San Miguel's del Milagro, St. Michael the Miracle, there in Tlaxcala in Mexico. And we filmed an episode of Explore there that will be airing on EWTN shortly. And what was interesting is when we filmed in that shrine, we saw that there was a tomb for Diego inside the church itself. And, of course, we don't see this happening very often unless there's a saint from that region or area, that we see the body of somebody buried in the church itself right next to the altar. This is an exception, I suppose. And, of course, when we talk about canonizations, when we look at Europe, of course, there are, you know, numerous canonizations over the centuries. Italy leads the way with the home field advantage, I think, with canonizations, and then France and Spain other than that. And canonization seemed to move much quicker in Europe. But when you have a place like Mexico, even Juan Diego, the great visionary associated with the one of the most famous Marian apparitions in history, the 1531 Marian apparitions of Guadalupe, we saw him canonized in the 2000s, even though he was born in 1474. So that took a long time for that one to happen. And so perhaps similarly, with Diego Lázaro, we see a very long time, a long wait, before he might be canonized. But I think the larger question is a good one, which is, why aren't some visionaries canonized? Well, it turns out that being a Marian visionary is perhaps the, by percentage anyway, the likeliest way a person will be canonized a saint. But of course, seeing visions of Mary doesn't guarantee that somebody is a saint. It doesn't work that way. And Mary appears to, she's appeared to atheists and to sinners and people who need to convert, and through the apparitions have some sort of an experience of faith. So we see that. So, and some people in their lives of faith have lived a saintly life after those visions. And we have these famous visionaries like the Children of Fatima or St. Bernadette Subaru in 1858 in Lourdes, or St. Juan Diego in Guadalupe, and or at the, in the Miraculous Medal, St. Catherine Labouré. There's a handful of Marian apparitions that have a saintly visionary, so this is not uncommon. But there is no guarantee that just seeing Mary guarantees that somebody is going to make the right choices for the rest of their life. And we can even look at the visionaries at La Salette in 1846, the two children who saw Mary. I don't suspect that they'll be canonized. I think that they went on to live different sorts of lives and maybe weren't of the saintly sort. We don't know how they died, of course, but will they be somebody held up as an example of holiness? Probably not. So with various visions of Mary, there's no guarantee that that sainthood is the next step, or at least the proclamation of sainthood anyway. So thanks for your question, Andy. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe we'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. You all know Fatima May 13th, or Lourdes February 11th, or Guadalupe December 12th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. And this lines up to famous feast days or Marian miracles or the building of basilicas or other ways that Mary is honored by cultures all around the world. You can check out this project. Go to 365dayswithmary.com, pick up the book, download the app, or go to the Facebook page and join any of 10,000 other followers who get a different Marian devotion each and every day of the calendar year. So for today's date, we have August 16th. We have Our Lady of Graces from Tocoroma in Colombia in the year 1711. And I traveled to Colombia a couple times in the past couple of years, and we filmed episodes for Explore there. And I kind of was interested in going to this spot, Our Lady of the Graces from Tocoroma, but our path did not go there. So we'll have to be a future trip to Colombia to see this. But Our Lady of the Graces is celebrated in northeastern Colombia, where the people of Ocaña commemorate the finding of a sacred image beneath the bank of a tree over 300 years ago. Cristobal Melo, a mestizo who operated a small farm with a sugar mill with his son on October 16, 1711, went in search of a log to make a trough, and Cristobal removed the bark from the selected piece of wood and uncovered an image of Our Lady in the form of the Immaculate Conception carved in the sapwood. And the prodigious image is venerated in an annual fiesta with masses. And on August 16, 2011, the image was pontifically crowned as part of the tricentennial celebration. And that is Our Lady of Graces from Tocoroma in Colombia from 1711. And I think we might put this image in the category of a chiropoita, a not-made-from-humans-hands image. We talk about those things like cases of Our Lady of Las Lajas, also in Colombia, or Our Lady of Guadalupe. So a fascinating image. I'd love to see it in person someday. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We do this every week where we talk about a miracle happening on the day's date at some point in Christian history. And so in August of 1730, consecrated hosts were stolen from the Basilica of St. Francis in Siena. And miraculously, days later, the hosts reappeared in the offering box of the Church of St. Mary of Provenzano, untouched and incorrupt, and they remain perfectly preserved and exhibited to this day. And I had the privilege of going there just a couple of months ago and filming an Explore episode at Siena. And I got to see these miraculous hosts that have been tested by science. And they are not corrupting in the way that you might expect a host almost 300 years later. So fascinating miracle of the day, the Eucharistic miracle of Siena. Let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. For today's date is Blessed Petra de San Jose Perez Florido, who lived from 1845 to 1906 in Spain. Her feast day is today, August 16th. She was born on December 7th, 1845, in Valle de Abdalajas in Malaga in Spain, as Ana Josefa Perez Florido. She was the youngest of five children born to Jose Perez and Maria Florido, and her mother died when the girl was three, and her paternal grandmother stepped in to help raise and educate her. Ana developed devotion to Mary and Joseph. It was a time of arranged marriages, and the family received multiple proposals, but turned them all down, and Ana was overjoyed as she hadn't felt an early call to religious life. Her family objected and prevented her from joining the Little Sisters of the Poor. In 1872, her father finally relented and approved her vocation. He died in 1875, and Ana began supporting the elderly and neglected people in her city, and when they saw her work, city officials asked that she open a home for the elderly. The Poor of Bethlehem opened on March 19th in 1875. Ana joined the Mercedarians on November 1st in 1878, but soon felt called to leave them to start her own congregation, the Mothers of the Abandoned. She received approval from her bishop in 1883 and from Pope Leo XIII in 1891, and she took the name Petra of St. Joseph and made her perpetual profession in 1891. And she spent the rest of her life leading and growing the sisters' mothers, and they continue their good work in at least eight countries, even today. And she died on August 16, 1906, in Barcelona, in Spain, of complications arising from diabetes. And she was buried in August and reinterred in 1920, and her relics were stolen from the Royal Sanctuary of San Jose in Barcelona, where the place was looted and burned in 1936 during anti-persecutions in the Spanish Civil War. And she was reinterred in 1984. She was declared venerable by Pope Paul VI in 1971, and then declared blessed in 1994 by Pope John Paul II at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. In her beatification miracle from 1951 from Spain, when Pastora Lopez Moya was healed from a life-threatening complication of childbirth. And that is today's Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Petra de San Jose Perez Florido, who from Spain. And with one more miracle, she will go from Blessed Petra to Saint Petra. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We always try to point you to the next episode where you can tune into my show on EWTN. You can read the book as well, available at EWTNRC.com, called They Might Be Saints, about the 24 saints and blesseds and venerables. And I think it's my best book, but you can pick it up there. You can also check out the series, They Might Be Saints, which airs on EWTN on various times. You can go to theymightbesaints.com for different air dates. And so for this week, we've got They Might Be Saints, Blessed Francis Xavier Silos. In the life of Francis Xavier Silos, who was a renowned confessor, spiritual director, and leader of missions throughout the United States in the early 19th century, and there's now a promising new miracle that's being attributed to him, check that one out, They Might Be Saints, Francis Xavier Silos, which is available on August 19th on EWTN television. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Timothy Tarnacki from the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa about that image from Jasna Góra, Our Lady of Częstochowa, Queen of Poland. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We talk a lot on this show about Marian icons, and I travel the world for my Explore series on EWTN, and I've gotten to see some of the greatest miraculous icons in history. Of course, I love Our Lady of Guadalupe there in Mexico. But perhaps one of my other all-time favorites is Our Lady of Częstochowa in Poland. That's probably partly because I am I'm a partly Polish guy myself, despite the O apostrophe in my last name. But I think the story behind Our Lady of Częstochowa is amazing. And the stories of miracles and the visits of popes to this incredible icon are inspiring for Catholics around the world. Well, we've got the feast day of Our Lady of Częstochowa coming up on August 26th, the Queen of Poland, as we would call her. And we're so excited to be joined again today by Father Timothy Tarnacki from the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Welcome back to the program, Father Timothy.
Hello. Hello, Michael, and thank you so much for this invitation. It's so good to be here with you and talk about Our Lady of Częstochowa.
Yeah, this is, for me especially, for Polish Americans and for Polish people around the world, this is the title of Mary that that is most thought of when we talk about the Queen of Poland, Our Lady of Częstochowa. Let's talk a little bit about the history. What do we know? There are some legendary stories about where this icon comes from. Some have said that perhaps St. Luke painted it on the dining room, the kitchen table of the Holy Family. And then there are other ideas about the origin of this image. What do we know? Where does the image of Our Lady of Częstochowa come from?
So the icon of Our Lady of Częstochowa is a little bit, the origins of that icon are a little bit mysterious to us. Of course, as you mentioned, Michael, the legend attributes St. Luke as the painter, as the author of this icon. There are a few icons that are believed that St. Luke painted of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and so Our Lady of Częstochowa is one of them. According to the legends, we know that after being in the Holy Land, the icon was found by St. Helena, and it was in Constantinople. And from that, it ended up being in Russia, in the East, until the Prince of Poland, Prince Ladislaus, he found this icon during one of his military operations that he was going into the East, fighting some battles. And during that time, he came into the possession of this icon and brought it with him to Poland. So the history is a little bit mysterious. We know definitely that the icon of Our Lady of Częstochowa is a Greek icon, and so it has characteristics of a Greek icon, and so it comes from that Eastern part of Christianity.
And can you explain a little bit of the iconography as it relates to Greek icons? I think it's of that famous style. Talk to us about the specific style of icon that we see in Our Lady of Częstochowa.
Yes, so the icons in Eastern Christianity, in Greece, they would always have symbols, and they would basically, like, through their characteristics, they would present a type of a language. Just like the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, when we do some research, we can get to know what some things mean, what symbols mean. With the icon in the East, with the iconography in the East, we even say that you don't paint the icons, you write them, because there's a specific language of symbols, colors, gestures that are presented in the icon, and the icon becomes sort of the window, a window to God, to the Blessed Mother, to heaven. And so through that icon, we can experience the Lord. We can experience the Lord through his saints. And so this type of icon that we have, the Our Lady of Częstochowa, is called Chodogetria, which can be translated as the one who shows the way. So we see that when we look at the icon of Our Lady, as Mary with her right hand, she points to Jesus, who is the way. And so this is the moment in the gospel at the wedding at Cana when Mary said, "Do whatever my son tells you." And so the icon of Our Lady of Częstochowa is ultimately expressing that gospel passage in a very deep theological way. Mary is showing the way, Jesus, who is the way. And that's why it is this style of icon is Chodogetria, the one who shows the way, Mary showing us Jesus.
We're talking today with Father Timothy Tarnacki from the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. And of course, that image of Our Lady of Częstochowa is famous, having a very severe look with a scar on her face. This is sort of something that the Polish people have embraced, and there's a sort of a legend or a story that talks about how that scar came to be. First, talk about what the meaning of the scar might be for the Polish people especially. And then what do we know? How did that scar get there in the first place?
Yes, so the scar was not part of the original icon of the original painting. when the shrine of Our Lady of Chance Jehovah started in 1382 with the Pauline Fathers building a chapel and then eventually growing the shrine to Our Lady, many votive offerings were brought by the people who have experienced graces through the intercession of Our Lady. And a lot of those votive offerings or jewels, they were attached to the icon itself. That was a very ancient practice of expressing gratitude and thanksgiving to God and to the saints, to the Blessed Mother, for graces received. And so in 15th century, the Hussites, the followers of John Hus, when they were ravaging that part of Poland, they attacked the shrine of Jasna Góra, of Our Lady of Częstochowa. And so they wanted to steal the votive offerings, and so it was just easier for them to take the whole image of Our Lady. And then they put it on the wagon as they were running away with the icon and with the jewels and votive offerings. And then when they were being chased, all of a sudden the horses pulling the wagon, they refused to move forward. And so in their anger, they slashed Mary's face with their sword. And so those scars then became the sign of Mary as being the sorrowful mother. Mary, who's under the cross with her son Jesus, but who also accompanies each one of us through our sufferings and through our struggles in our life, and especially connected with the history of the Polish nation. As Poland in the following centuries has experienced a lot of wars, a lot of persecution, losing her independence and then going into times of bondage and slavery, World War One, and regaining independence, and World War II, the horror of the World War II, and then the time of communism. So a lot of these situations, they helped the Polish people to see Mary as their queen and as a mother who understands the suffering of her children.
Absolutely. We've been talking today with Father Timothy Tarnacki. He's giving us the background of Our Lady of Częstochowa and her great meaning for the Polish people and beyond. And Father Timothy, when we talk about Our Lady of Częstochowa, we can talk about miracles. Why did they consider this to be a miracle-working icon?
There were many miracles associated with Our Lady, especially at the shrine of Jasna Góra. There are volumes of recorded miracles that has happened through the intercession of Mary. Many healings, many amazing graces, not only in the past throughout centuries, but also in recent times as well. So Mary has always been in some way showing us that she's still with us, that she's accompanying us. One of the very famous miracles is during World War II, when the German pilots, they were given orders to bomb the shrine of Our Lady. For some reason, all of this was not successful. They could not find their way. They could not bomb the shrine. And there are many stories like that that prove to us the intercession of Our Lady, and so many ways how she's present at her shrine in Poland, but also everywhere where we can see the image of Our Lady of Częstochowa. So as the image is all over the world now, especially spread by the love and devotion of St. John Paul II, wherever we see the image of Our Lady of Częstochowa, we can also ask for these graces, ask for these miracles, for this intercession, but especially at shrines dedicated to her, such as the one in Poland and the one in Pennsylvania, the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown.
Wonderful. And let's talk about your shrine there in Doylestown. I know the Feast of Our Lady of Częstochowa is upon us, coming right up here. Talk a little bit about if somebody were to visit your shrine, a pilgrim from the area or from anywhere around the world, if they were to come to your shrine, what would they see and experience at the shrine at Doylestown?
Yes, so the Feast of Our Lady of Częstochowa is coming up on the 26th of August. And then at our shrine, we're going to be celebrating it the Sunday that's closest to that day, so the 25th. And so this is a major solemnity at the shrine. And so if people who are coming to visit, even for the first time, it's a great occasion to encounter the Blessed Mother. And so we'll have all masses at the shrine celebrated from the Solemnity of Our Lady. So it's an occasion to receive a plenary indulgence by visiting the shrine and praying through the intercession of Mary. The main celebrations will happen at 11 a.m. That's the main mass in English. And then the main mass in Polish at 12:30 will be presided by Archbishop Thomas Łęcki, the Archbishop of Miami. And so the whole day will be dedicated to Mary. And then at 3:30 p.m., there will be a special devotion to Our Lady with a Eucharistic procession around shrine grounds. So that's at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Timothy Tarnacki, joining us to talk about Our Lady of Częstochowa and your great shrine there. I've been there myself. It's a beautiful place. I encourage anybody with a background from Poland or otherwise, somebody with a devotion to Our Lady of Częstochowa, or who would just like to see a beautiful shrine in this area. We'd love to recommend that people visit in Doylestown, Our Lady of Częstochowa, the national shrine there. Thank you so much, Father Timothy, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much, and I hope you can visit us at the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa, and that you can find your personal connection with the Blessed Mother through this amazing icon.
Wonderful. God bless you, Father. And that was Father Timothy Tarnacki from the National Shrine of Our Lady of Częstochowa in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. You can find out more if you go to the website częstochowa.us. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio. Check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today. Nanette Reiner is talking to us about the Little Cajun Saint. And also Father Timothy Tarnacki talking to us about Our Lady of Częstochowa. Check out my series Explore with the Miracle Hunter on today on August 16th at 5 p.m. Central Time, or also They Might Be Saints this week. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.